Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all. I'm here with Kirk this evening. How are you, Kirk?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
We're at the land of running waters.
Yes, we are. There's no water shortage now.
Yeah, I used to say you were in a drought. I used to pay $7,000 a month for my water bill.
We
owned a house in California.
I think you moved at the right time, though.
You know what I've been told is that Montecito now is such a war zone. There is no liquidity. You could have a $15 million house and try to sell it for $1 million. You couldn't sell it. There's literally nobody buying anything, because even if you're one of the few homes that's not in the direct line of the boulders and the floods and the mudslides, your approach to it, everything around you, is a disaster zone. And you don't have drinkable water. You don't have gas, natural gas, water heaters, stove tops, barbecues won't run. You don't have reliable power or internet, and about every 3 weeks they give you a mandated evacuation notice. It's not much fun.
No. Boy, somebody watching after you, weren't they?
Oh, boy, we certainly got out in time.
Right, big bullet there.
Yeah, really happy about that. Mm-hmm. Boy, the world, though, is a mess. Every time you read the newspaper, it's just, I think Donald Trump has finally outdone Tiger Woods. I mean, Tiger Woods has 18 holes on a golf course, and I think he had that many girlfriends. But best I can tell, Donald Trump has at least another 9, maybe 27 total now, right?
They haven't kept up that close, but it couldn't surprise me. My gosh,
it is. It's just amazing how bad our last election was. You know, we used to kid about why would you want to vote for the lesser of two evils, but this election was the greater of two evils.
Yeah.
Do you hear though? Hillary Clinton finally had a formidable reason as to why she lost the last election. You know, she blamed it for a while on the FBI. You know, it's not that what she wrote in her emails scuttled her, which is what it was, but that their emails were released. You know, that was the big issue, so blame it on Russia. And then it was Comey for writing a letter saying, you know, that some of the stuff that she did was pretty shady. So she wanted to blame it on that, then she blamed it on Trump being a misogynist. But finally, she was overseas, and she says, now I'm going to tell you the real reason I lost. Stepford wives. Women who were told how to vote by their husbands, by their sons, and by their bosses. So her answer is that women have no capacity to make up their own mind. They are lorded over by men, and they simply capitulate.
Well, no good way to go get out of that. Once you say, okay, women, I mean, she is one. So does that mean she falls in that category as well, or?
Oh my goodness, I prefer to say that because, you know, Hillary Clinton would be an unknown backwater attorney and podunk nowhere if it wasn't for her husband.
Yes.
I mean, there is no denying that. She is a nobody without her husband. And she was the ultimate Stepford wife when her husband started having the affairs with Jennifer Flowers and Monica Lewinsky. Oh, okay. I think it was the third one in there. And she didn't say boo.
No. She really went after them is what a lot of people say. So I don't know how true that is, but
it
makes sense.
Pretty astonishing that a woman would claim that she was not elected because women have no mind of their own.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just absolutely astonished. The only thing more astonishing is how bad things are for Donald Trump, and yet he just continues to flail. I wonder if he's going to set the all-time record for you're fired. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in that administration in the last 4 years. I think he would fire his own son and his own daughter, given the opportunity. It's a real mess. Well, I want to repeat the passage we read in Bereshit in the beginning, Genesis 17:6. This is this transition between the conversation that Yahweh had with Abraham in Genesis 15 and then 16. Of course, covers every aspect, not only of the covenant, all the terms and conditions of the covenant, but also delineates each of the benefits of delivered by the Moed Mikre. So it is really a profound combination of discussions. But this statement in 17:6, which we read last time, prompts a more thorough and thoughtful review of the potential dimensions and the relationship between these things and dimensions. So let's review 17:6 and then talk a little bit about dimensionality, Kirk. It begins, "And I will enable you to flourish and be fruitful." Parar et ata. Now, your English translation just say, I'll cause you to be fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a shepherd, right? I mean, raised flocks of sheep. That was his primary occupation.
Right.
You don't really think of being fruitful when it comes to sheep, and I'm unaware of him having orchards.
No.
So we're not talking horticulture here.
No.
No. So para, to be flourish and to be fruitful, will cause you to be productive, cause you to conceive offspring in abundance, creating a plentiful harvest, successive generations serving as a highly productive vine. What he's saying here is that out of this discussion and the covenant that is being presented through Abraham, there's going to be this tremendous harvest of souls. That Abraham's not going to be the only one, nor will just the addition of his son Yishak or his grandson Jacob or his great-grandchildren, the tribes of Israel, it's not limited to them. There's going to be a tremendous bounty of souls that are going to be harvested as a result of this relationship and the actions and conversations and Yahweh's dealings with Abraham.
Right.
So I'm going to enable you to flourish and be fruitful, to be productive, to conceive offspring in abundance through you. Now, even if you look at it from be fruitful from a offspring point of view.
Yeah.
How many kids did Abraham have?
Well, he had one by the wrong wife, one by the wrong girlfriend.
One by a slave, right. Yeah.
One by
and he was discarded, so that wasn't considered very fruitful. Yeah. And one by his... his 90-year-old barren wife, Sarah.
Yeah.
But one, really, right?
Right.
Would you, if you planted a peach tree and you had one peach?
I have a lemon tree so far. The 5 years has produced one lemon, so yes, I have.
Okay, would you call that lemon tree fruitful?
No, sir.
No. So, in this case, Abraham had one lemon and one orange on his fruit tree. Right?
Yeah.
So, no, he's not talking about just
I hope not.
His direct
okay.
descendants, right?
Sound very silly if it was.
Right. And Abraham's direct descendants that mattered were Israelites.
Right.
And this says, accordingly, Gentiles, Goyim.
Yes. That's how we function.
So now we're dealing with people from all nations and all races,
mm-hmm.
and all places. So now we definitely are not talking about a genetic link, but instead a harvest of saved souls.
Right.
We're left with no other option. So I will enable you to flourish and be fruitful, mayod, to an extraordinary degree and to the highest measured point on any scale. Mayod is very much like E equals MC squared,
mm-hmm.
with the speed of light multiplied by the speed of light. Mayod is to the greatest extent possible, times the greatest extent possible. So what you're dealing with, mayod, the thing that I like to talk about, and I realize that for those mathematicians and scientists out there, what I'm about to say is an irrational thought, but it conveys the idea nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to multiply infinity times infinity,
yeah,
mayod is essentially infinity. Mm-hmm. Well, mayod would be infinity squared.
Right.
Well, that's what we're conveying here. So I'm going to cause you to flourish and be fruitful to an extraordinary degree, to the highest point measured on any scale, by abundantly increasing capabilities while exceedingly empowering, mightily prolonging time to the greatest extent possible. Mayod. So he is now absolutely, unequivocally not talking about descendants in the sense of progeny. We are talking about transforming Abraham's soul,
right.
Yeah, so that he is expanded to the extent of infinity squared,
mm-hmm.
and doing the same for those who benefit from what is being offered by Yahweh through the covenant.
Now that's
so. This is a really powerful concept.
I was just going to say, it's missed by every translator. No one goes
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary to me. Because
they might say that mayod means a great or to a significant degree, but yeah, mayod is not to a significant degree. It's to an extraordinary degree.
Yeah.
And it wasn't written once. It was written twice in any time.
Right.
Hebrew's way of multiplicity. Mm-hmm. Of expanding beyond the concept of the word is to repeat the word. And you're right, there isn't a single translation that bothers to note that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the whole purpose of the covenant. The whole purpose of Yahweh says, I'm going to make you in my image.
Yeah.
It's the whole purpose of being a parent, to help your child to grow to the greatest extent possible.
There's no secret in the Torah where Yahweh is not equated with light. He uses that metaphor over and over and over and over
mm-hmm.
again. So it's not like you couldn't understand it. It's not a odd thought.
No, and particularly today, we have an advantage that the hearers of these words some 3,500 years ago did not have. And that is that they were unaware of the correlation between energy, light, and matter, physical bodies.
Yeah.
they had no concept that there that these things were related things. They're just hugely different amounts of the same thing. And that today, because Einstein has came up with, and we have since subsequently proven the theory that E equals mc squared, Yahweh, who is light, is going to transform us into light energy by multiplying the equivalent of who we are physically by the speed of light squared. And that's the concept that is being presented here. It gives us tremendous insight to understand the nature of our universe, which they did not have. And he says, then I will allow and produce through you accordingly Gentiles, Goyim, nations of people, related by geography, ethnicity, religion, politics, comprised of heathens and pagans, who are estranged from Yahweh and those who are always rejected, kings, Malak rulers, political, religious, and military leaders, who on account of you shall come into being. Now, most translations and most people will pass over this saying, oh yeah, well, you know, then there'd be, you know, all sorts of kings will be descended from Abraham. Well, that's not true. And not only is it not true, this is Yahweh saying, I'm going to do this. There's only two kings that Yahweh appointed. And neither of them were Goyim.
No.
The only two kings that Yahweh appointed were Dod and his son, Solomon.
Solomon.
We're not talking about that. But if you look at it from what has happened, you know, we have the advantage of looking back.
Of course.
What you recognize is that the three best-known religions in the world, and including the two most popular religions, Christianity and Islam, the rulers of every Christian and Islamic nation throughout time have claimed the authority of the God of the what they would call the Old Testament, the God of Abraham,
right,
to rule.
Sure.
So this is precisely what has happened. So it is an interesting concluding statement. What I wanted to do is just have a brief conversation about dimensions.
Okay.
Because Mayod is a dimensional concept. Mayod means dimensions, increased dimensions. The seven Moed Mikre, invitations to meet, and you know, there's seven of everything. You know, there's seven Moed dimensions. There are Meod dimensions. There are seven Moed Mikre, invitations to meet. The 7 days of creation, the first seven Dabar statements that Yah etched in stone after reading the previous paragraph on Meod, Meod. All of that should flash before our eyes as we seek to make the kind of connections that facilitate our understanding. So here's some thoughts, and jump in where you may agree or disagree or want to augment it. But my thought was that the first dimension, length seems to correspond with Pesach Passover, the place where life becomes eternal. That's 1D. 1D is a line, albeit not necessarily straight. Now, a lot of people think, one dimension, that must be a point. No, a point is zero dimensions. A line is one dimension. But, you know, a line is eternal. A line is infinite. A line doesn't have to have an end. A line can, in fact, in our universe, it probably curves, but a line is 1D.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily straight.
Right.
Yeah, and it can be truncated or it can be infinite. It grows out of, a line grows out of 0D, which is a singularity. A line presented as a singular dimension may be symbolic of the timeline of life.
Yeah.
Whether that may have been in the past or what it may become in the future. Life, like the timeline, emerged from the singularity which precipitated the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
This explosion of light coalesced into the mix of energy and matter that eventually produced living beings and ultimately provided us with the opportunity to know our Creator.
Mm-hmm.
The transformational events occurring on the first day served as necessary prerequisites, setting the stage for life's conception. Without Pesach, Yahweh's doorway to life, the mortal timeline is short. But with Pesach, it's a portal into the next dimension. The mortal timeline can be short, but again, once you benefit from Pesach, the line extends forever into the future.
Yeah.
So it's also interesting, the story of Pesach and the length of days is reflected in the first statement that Yahweh etched in stone on the first tablet, as it serves as the invitation to live forever with God,
mm-hmm.
or ignore it and do not exist with Him. It was on this day that the one and only God started everything into motion with a single verb, Hayah, to exist, and a single noun, the object of that verb, or light, which serves to define time itself.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
One is profound in dimensions.
Yeah.
Now, the second dimension is depth. I think it corresponds with matzah, unyeasted bread. The road to vindication and perfection is across this threshold. This threshold of going from one dimension to two. The ultimate crossroads. The Yogi Berra said, if you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Take it.
Yeah, at this time, mankind is presented with a binary decision.
Mm-hmm.
Remain as one, which leads to zero, by the way, or select two, which leads to three. One choice among two options. Two is the day of separation. We can choose to live with Yahweh, who is perfect, or die with imperfect men. While 1D cannot be seen, and 2D is too thin to support life, matzah represents the most important intersection along the road to life where we can decide to accept Yahweh's terms and conditions. We can choose to ignore them by meandering through this intersection or crash, trying to change the rules of God's roadway. So on unyeasted bread, we are either perfected or not. And not isn't permissible in God's presence. We can stay on our life's mortal timeline or climb a dimension above it. As a result, matzah and the second dimension represent the binary decision between the religion of man or a relationship with God. As such, it is the subject of the second statement Yahweh wrote on the first tablet, where He encouraged mankind to avoid every aspect of man's most debilitating institution, religion. It is also the subject of creation's second day, a time of expansion, of Asher, of relativity, which presents the path to the benefits of the relationship. Now, the third dimension is height. It serves to correspond with Bukurim, firstborn children who get to stand up before God. 3D is where physical life becomes possible and spiritual existence commences. It doesn't stay there, but it begins there. At this juncture, some continue their ascent to God while others descend, falling further away from Him. The third dimension now makes it possible for the benefits of the first two mikre to be realized, which explains why Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim are always celebrated together. Pesach by itself is counterproductive. Pesach and Matzah are valuable because they lead to Bukurim.
Right.
Life, perfection,
right,
and adoption. They are fulfilled by Yosha at the same time, and they should be viewed as three acts in the same play. It is at the completion of one's mortal existence in 3D that each soul is directed through one of the three distinct doorways through which human lives pass. Eternal life with the island, death and destruction of one's soul ceasing to exist, or eternal separation, time and Sheol. Each based upon the choices we make relative to God's instructions. Not surprisingly, the third and final statement Yahweh etched on the first of the two tablets contains a stern warning regarding the consequences of our actions relative to Yahweh in this life. And while life is technically possible in 3D, without an extension of time, it loses its value. Therefore, we should not be surprised that life was conceived on this, the third day. But it is expanded and elongated and enriched and empowered on the fourth day, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
And by the fourth, Lord, we pray.
Right.
So that brings us to the fourth dimension, time itself. Now, it seems to correspond to Shavuot, the promise of the Shabbat in seven. Shavuot is the fourth Moed Mikre, and it was fulfilled in the final invitation to be called out and meet with God on the Yobel year of 4000 Yah, 33 CE on the Imperial Roman and Catholic calendar. Stuck in the ordinary flow of time, physical life, while possible in 3D, just like the plants conceived on this day, remains rooted in time. In 4D, mass is a spiritual impediment and navigational liability, making those rooted in the previous dimension grounded and time-bound. To progress into the fullness of the fourth dimension, we have to be enormously empowered. Which brings us back to the energy side of E equals MC squared. Mass essentially imprisons us on this rock we call Earth. That whole notion of a bodily resurrection is so stupid, so counterproductive. This Christian myth, that is celebrated on Easter of the bodily resurrection is just moronic.
Why would you want it?
It's counterproductive. It assures you that you will never escape this rock that we call Earth. You're bound to it, will die on it, will decay in it.
And ultimately be destroyed by it, too.
I wasn't given the worst body or the best body. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you the body I was given is deteriorating. It ain't nearly what it was 20 years ago or 40 years ago. And that is the nature of the physical being. The same for everyone. It starts out weak, it ends weak. It's not all that strong in the middle. So this nation of the bodily resurrection of on Easter is not only pagan, it's just utterly and completely stupid. And to be resurrected bodily in heaven, what a moronic idea. It's physically impossible. Mortal beings, physical beings, do not have eternal life. They cannot be empowered.
The two things that stand out to me in the first four that we've done here, that you've done here, is number one, that you couldn't have an association with Yahweh until he started with a Nesama, because you couldn't judge, and he wasn't going to do it with the wilder, animalistic human beings.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he hated that when Cain was thrown out of the garden and created more people than gave them a Nesama, and then we have the Nephilim. So that's a terrible situation. So he chose Adam and Chawa, to do that, but he couldn't have a relationship with anyone until they had a Nesama, and they were the first ones to have a Nesama. And then when you think about being stuck with a body, instead of how could you ever associate with God truly unless you were like him, being of kind, the same kind as him? So you'd have to be animated
right.
into light. Because
right.
otherwise you couldn't, how are you going to carry on with him? He's not here.
It, and if you wanted a, an explanation of it, it would be like you netting up a group of tiny little tadpoles, or even tadpoles take little minnows from a stream.
Okay.
And put him in a fishbowl,
mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, I'm going to make you eternal minnows. Of course, it's not possible because they're physical beings. But I'm going to make you eternal minnows, and we're going to have an eternal relationship together. Okay, after you've seen him swim around the bowl a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
what else is there?
Well,
you're just you're
okay,
different.
Very, very, very limited.
Yeah, it, there is no communication.
You can't go where I'm going. You can't be outside of the water.
No,
with me.
We can't communicate. We can't explore. We can't. There's really, in fact, if you tried to hold them in your hand, take them for a walk with you, you're going to kill them. So, if we can't be transformed into light, the nature of Yahweh, there is no point to any of this.
So why would the blessing, why would somebody think about the offer to Abraham being a, such a great blessing if all it is his life here and his children's life, or as in Christianity, being revived again, reanimated again to walk on this earth, which would die, it would just be dying and dying and dying, if we, even if you could do it more than once. It still would be terribly dissatisfying.
So physical bodies comprise a barrier to entry. There's no way you could enter a spiritual realm with a physical body. You want to keep your physical body? You want to be resurrected? You want to be buried so that, you know, it's been embalmed and your body intact so that, you know, you can be resurrected?
Yeah,
I guarantee one thing. You ain't going to heaven.
Mm-mm.
Physically impossible. And it, not only is it physically impossible, it would be counterproductive, particularly for you, for anyone. It's a limiting factor for those who wish to explore the universe with our Maker and dimensions beyond our comprehension. So it is on Shabuah that Yahweh's children are empowered and enriched, in effect liberated in the fourth dimension, thereby facilitating the benefits of the covenant, making the lives of God's children infinitely valuable, capable, and enduring. Moed, Moed, or Meod, Meod. Equally notable, since Shabuah is observed, seven sevens from Bukurim, promise is reflected in the fourth statement Yahweh etched in stone. The first instruction on the second of his two tablets, which was entirely focused on the Shabbat,
mm-hmm.
seven. Moreover, the fourth day of creation, it was focused upon light and time, with the sun and moon becoming visible so that God's children might properly assess the timing of the Moed appointed meetings, which are now known as the Mikra. Now, more even than this, the fourth and final Moed Mikra, fulfilled in the fourth millennia following mankind's expulsion from Eden, though its association with, through its association with Yahweh's Yobel, serves to identify the timing and purpose of the three most important years in human history. Now, please consider the fact that the Yobel Lamb of God is observed every 7 times 7 plus 1, or 50 years, just as Shabuah is celebrated 7 sevens plus 1 day from Matzah. During the Yobel years, the Torah instructs God's people to set the proper example, to free the enslaved, to forgive all debts, and to reestablish Yisrael as the realm to live with Yahweh. It therefore collectively reinforces the individual benefits of the Mikra, whereby God's children are liberated from human servitude, and their sins are forgiven while they live in God's presence. Now, recognizing this is the fourth Moed, and that it was fulfilled in year 4000 Yah, we can easily deduce the timing of the other essential dates in the dimension of time. 40 Yobel from Eden is year 2000, 1968 BCE. That's when Abraham and Yitzhak confirmed the covenant with Yahweh. They did so on Moriah, Moriah. 40 Yobel, hence, is when Yehosha fulfilled the first four Moed Mikre, thereby honoring Yahweh's promise to provide the benefits of the covenant, returning individual men and women to Eden. 40 Yobel year, or from 40 Yobel, from year 4000 Yah, from 33 CE, brings us to year 6000 Yah, 2033 on our pagan calendars, and denotes the time Yahweh will return, fulfilling the final two Moed, Mikre Kippurim, reconciliations, and Sukkah, camping out. In this year and at this time, Yisrael and Yehudah will be reunited with Yahweh, living in the land with God, their debts forgiven, and their freedom secured. The entire earth will become as was Eden. Through Shavuah and the Yobel, through the fulfillment of the first four Moed Mikre, in year 4000 Yah, the timeline from Eden to Eden is laid out before those willing to thoughtfully consider the word of Yah. Now, since we're discussing dimensions, there is a perceived conflict from this point forward. Scientists tell us that dimensions intersect one another at right angles, as is the case with length, depth, and height, but not with time, at least from our limited perspective on it. But this limitation should not surprise us, because we have the capacity to understand that a two-dimensional construct couldn't possibly envision a third dimension intersecting flatland, providing height. Similarly, as a three-dimensional being stuck in time, we can't fathom how greater dimensions intersect our own, much less what we would experience within them. So as we move through the fourth and fifth and sixth and then seventh dimensions, the best we can do is extrapolate from what we know to interpret what we seek to understand. Therefore, while we have engaged in a degree of considered conjuncture up to this point, now we are moving into the realm of reasoned extrapolation. The fifth dimension. That's what we're doing here. And I'm not even sure it's an educated guess. It's more of an extrapolation.
Best from the know. What we know. Yeah.
Right. So we're using reason to extrapolate. And to extrapolate is necessary because we're being told mayod, mayod. We're being increased beyond measure. So we need to, well, we don't need to, we benefit from this extrapolation. The fifth dimension, which I consider to be repulsion, I see similar to the effect of dark energy. Dark energy has a repulsive nature. It seems to correspond with Teruah trumpets. It is here that the beneficiaries of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, who are now immortal and perfected and adopted and empowered, enlightened and enriched during Shavuah, are afforded the opportunity on trumpets to announce a warning to those who have been deluded. The message trumpeted on this day also includes an invitation, calling those who are actively searching and willing to listen to the realm of the covenant. The players in 5D have all risen from a singularity through the first four dimensions and are now flourishing in the fifth with length of life and breadth of character, walking tall throughout time, fully cognizant of the consequence of being right or wrong. And it is their souls that are especially germane on trumpets, because their nephesh soul and breath of life impassions the warning blown through the shofar, the ram's horn trumpet, and controls the way the breath passes through their larynx to represent the most important aspects of Yahweh's message. Also relevant, the first mention of Nefesh soul occurs on the fifth day of creation, as Yahweh reveals that all of the animals he conceived on this day would have a soul, even man, albeit not yet with a neshama, conscience. Consciousness, however, would enable animals to be observant and to be responsive, qualities that would set them apart from plants. And since our nefesh soul and breath of life comes from our mortal parents, and the gift of the Spirit is provided by a Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother, recognizing their significance is the subject of the fifth instruction, Yahweh, etched in stone. Now, the sixth dimension, attraction, which I see is similar to the effect of dark matter. And I think I said dark matter earlier, and I really meant to say, I said dark energy. I'm sorry. So I was right. Mm-hmm. Dark energy. It's dark energy that's repulsive, and it's dark matter that is attractive. Yeah, that's why I actually said it correctly. It seems to correspond to Kippurim, reconciliations, which serves as the final referendum between man and God. While they are currently separated from one another and from him, Yahweh's affinity for Yahudah and Yisrael is unwavering. He has promised to reconcile his relationship with his chosen people prior to his return on Yom Kippurim in the Yobel year of 6000 Yah. This is a Sunday evening at sunset, 6:22 p.m. in Jerusalem, October 2nd, 2033 on the calendar of Imperial Rome and Roman Catholicism. And so we shall.
You know,
now, this is
rather
people. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know that when you read that, if you're reading for the first time, or if you're maybe just young, early in your walk, that freaks out a lot of people because you can be so precise. But if you went back to a couple of paragraphs ago when we were talking about Yobels, when you were talking about the Yobel, all you need is a few things on the timeline to make the equation come out, and you say, okay, if this is this and this is that point, then those points, we know enough information when all these different events took place. So it's real easy to lay it over the Catholic.
We're just assessing the facts here.
When I read
6:22 p.m. in Yisrael,
yeah,
on Sunday, October 2nd, 2033, Yahweh is going to return. That would freak people out because
I think what it does, they haven't thought it through.
That 2033 is irrelevant. October 2nd is irrelevant. 6:22 p.m. is irrelevant.
Yeah.
What's relevant is it's Yom Kippurim.
Yeah.
What's relevant is Yahweh is coming to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and Yehuda, not with a goddamn church.
Yeah.
It's with Yisrael and Yehuda, and it's on the day of reconciliations that he's going to reconcile his relationship. It is the sixth of seven Moed Mikrais.
Yeah.
It is going to take place in year 6000 Yah. Year 6000 Yah is clearly 2033 on our calendars, just as year 4000 Yah was 33 CE. The first four Moed Mikre transpired in year 4000 Yah. That's just a fact. The first four transpired in year 4000 Yah. The last two will transpire in year 6000 Yah, including the sixth in year 6000 Yah. Just as the four took place in 4000 Yah. This isn't hard. You know, to go from the expulsion of Eden to 1968 BCE, year 2000 Yah, and the commencement of the covenant that makes all of this possible. The Moed Mikra exists only for the covenant.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they exist. And the formation of the covenant that makes the benefits possible, that defines the benefit, that explains the path to accept these things, took place in year 2000 Yah on Mount Moriah. And exactly 40 Yobel, 2,000 years later, in 33 CE, the first four Moed Mikre to enable the covenant's benefits were fulfilled by Yahusha and the set-apart spirit. So that 2,000 years after that 40 Yobel, which is 2033, the last two, Moed Mikri, will be fulfilled. It is so logical. It is so simple. It is so straightforward. The story is so compelling. You know, I read there's a stupid little Protestant church that's 100 yards from the entrance to our farm, and it says that man plans and God laughs. God damn Christian pastors. No, God plans.
And
man laughs.
Yeah.
This is God's plan. It's his only plan. He's not laughing about it. Think of what this plan cost him.
Yeah.
On Pesach, on Matzah, to enable Bakurim and Shavuah. And the agony that he has gone through all of the troubadours throughout time, to finally, as time comes to a close as we know it, ultimately reconciling his relationship with his wayward children so that he can camp out with us and return the earth back to its intended state, which was like the Garden of Eden.
I'm not sure.
The story is so clearly laid out, and yet when you present it, it's just the date people freak out because they're not thinking.
But as a Christian, though, I knew in 1948, the return of Israel, I knew that was the generation, the last generation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a love prophecy, at least I know it once. So we knew that was happening. So the last generation, and once you understand a Yobel, and nobody cares about a Yobel other than the covenant family. Once you know that's the last Yobel, it has to happen.
You know,
that Yobel, otherwise it's a lie. And he ain't missed one yet.
Yeah, a person born in 1948 would be 85 years old.
Yeah.
Pretty normal lifespan.
Yeah.
Today's world. And really, is it 1948 or is it 1967?
It could be back in the 30s when the Balfour.
Oh, no, it can't be back in the 30s because the Israel was, were what, 1%, 2% of the population?
Yeah,
prior to,
so.
Maybe a little more than that, but it's a very small number back in prior to 1948. 1948 is when after the war, Israelites began to return to Israel. But I said it could be 1967.
Okay.
Because that's
when Jerusalem,
the heart of the land, became part of Israel again.
Yeah.
In fact, my number would actually be 1967 is a much better number to go on. So 1967 to year 2000 is 33. Years, and from 2000 to 2033 is another 33. And so that's 66 years from then, isn't it? What's the number of men?
Yeah. Well, it's not time for another Yobel.
Right.
Six. That one.
Right. Six and six, number of men. 66 years from 1967.
Now, that's interesting.
To 2033.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yes.
Wow.
And by the way, if it were another Yobel, and we know that 2033 is a Yobel year because we know that 33 CE was a Yobel year. That's the year that Yosha fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bakurim. So, and we know that 968 BCE was a Yobel year. That's the year that the cornerstone was laid for the Yahweh's home.
Yeah.
So these things are really known.
It's not a secret. No, the
right.
Yobels are not.
And so and there are 50
really
years.
About it when they were.
Right. So 2083 is not a generation from 1948 or from 1967.
No.
So it's only 1 year. God's not random. God has a plan. You're right, Mister.
Yeah.
You're wrong, Mister. Christian pastor. That God laughs. No, God has a plan.
He's very excited about his plan.
He is. He's sticking to it. Really, really important to recognize that. He brought Israel back home in 1948, liberating Jerusalem, on their behalf in 1967 so that he might attract this generation's attention to the eradication of all religious institutions, as well as all of the men and women who serve as their hosts, with the fulfillment of the sixth Mikra. On the Day of Reconciliations, everyone who has made it thus far is on the cusp of living with Yahweh. They are as far as one can go in this 6D universe. Heaven in the seventh dimension is the final step. And so we find that the final addendum to creation was completed on the sixth day with the conception of man in the image of God, of Nesama, conscience man, being brought to life. And since mankind is Yahweh's greatest love, the sixth instruction God inscribed on his tablet of stone asks us to make a habit, or says not to make a habit, of killing what God has conceived. Those who have followed his guidance thus far have reached the sixth step in this foundational formula, which was conceived on the sixth day in association with God, who is one, enables the creation to live with their creator. And just think of it. It's exactly 66 years from the liberation of Jerusalem and Israel to the sixth Moed Mikra being fulfilled. Six for six.
Yeah. You realize in your last paragraph, in the fifth dimension, when you're talking about the Nesama, you also explains, it answers the question why Yahweh is so adamant about who can get in, who can join the covenant, based on this criterion, why he could not possibly change his plan at all. You give someone a Nesama, and all of a sudden they destroy the earth. We have nowhere to prove that, and plus we're seeing it now.
Yeah.
So if you ratchet somebody up, and that was a huge ratchet up from Homo sapiens in general.
Yeah. Correct.
If he does that to you with light, and you're not on board, and you haven't been tested and tried, and he knows who you are, my God, that would destroy everything. How do you kill it? I mean, I know he could, but I mean, I can put you in Sheol too later, but that's not the plan. He doesn't want to have to deal with this again. So.
Exactly.
So when you say, oh, God, why does he make it so hard, or da-da-da-da, in the comments that you hear sometimes, you go, it's got to be a testing of something.
Correct.
It's got to be a development of understanding.
You know, now we enter the seventh dimension, to the realm of clear and complete communication, the means to creation, understanding, and the relationships serving to direct light and to organize energy into matter, which seems to correspond with Sukkah, to camping out with God. During the fulfillment of the Mikra of Sukkah in year 6000, just 5 days after his return, the covenant's children will be invited to camp out with Yahweh in the promised land for 1,000 years, culminating in the year 7000, when God will create a new spiritual and new material realm. This time with his family as witnesses, enjoying what will be the ultimate at the commencement of this time and throughout eternity thereafter, Yahweh has promised to write a perfect and complete copy of his Torah guidance inside of his children, providing his sons and daughters with the instructions needed to explore the universe safely and enjoyably. Those who enter the seventh dimension are home, dwelling beyond the universe in a spiritual realm in 7D. It is the result of Sukkah shelters, presenting mankind residing with Yahweh in his tabernacle, sheltered beneath his tent. So it is on the seventh day that Yahweh will rest and reflect upon what he has set into motion, anticipating that it would all lead to this place, at least for those willing to follow him through words, through space and time. As one happy family of mankind, souls with common interests, living in a realm like Eden, wholly devoid of confusion, without conflict or religion, they now find a perfect harmony. This existing between men and their maker, making the seventh statement of Yahweh that he had etched in stone so long ago about not continuing to be adulterous, a fitting memorial of a place, of a people and time that no longer exists, of people cheating on their God. Now, this is the culmination of the journey of a lifetime. It is where the seventh step path Yahweh spoke of and then personally facilitated eventually leads. Each step we ascend along the way is infinitely enabling, empowering, enriching, and enlightening to God's children. What began 7 days or 15 billion years ago, depending on one's framework or frame of reference, really, as a singularity at I to the zero power, with the declaration of Haya Or, let there be light, is now infinity to the seventh power. With an infinite and eternal existence set out before all of those who came to know, understand, and accept the covenant's conditions. Now, there is the antithesis of this. The antithesis of this is what Turkey announced just this week. Did you read the news on Turkey? I had one of our covenant brothers, I think it was Chuck, but I'm not positive, but I was sent a copy of this article that was most stunning. Do you know what Turkey announced this week? It's somebody's been discussing, I think, in the chat room as well. This is the anti-Yah. Erdogan's defense minister and in his controlled media announced that they were compiling an army of Islam that would be 5,000 soldiers strong. And it would combine the militaries of every Islamic country. And that its sole purpose would be to destroy Israel, to send more jihadists and weapons against Israel than there are bullets to deflect them. That tsunami that Yahweh speaks of, this flood of Islamic insurgents roaring and rushing into Israel, that overwhelm Israel's defenses, that I wrote about and spoke about as we, so many years ago, we translated Yeshaya 17 and 18. Well, Turkey announced this week that it was doing exactly what God said they would do. Isn't that amazing?
That's terrifying.
And by the way, who is the largest arms supplier to Turkey and to the other Islamic countries like Saudi Arabia that will be joining them?
Mr. Trump.
Yeah, America. And yeah, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia was being questioned because it is said that he has said that he has Kushner in his hip pocket. You know, Kushner needs the money, you know, Trump's son-in-law, and he can supply it. And collectively, this army of Islam would outgun Israel 25-1, all with American weapons. And they would send more jihadists into Israel than there are adult Jews in Israel. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So how long can Damascus last?
Well,
that's another telling thing.
You know, what's interesting is that Turkey, of course, turned against both Damascus, against Assad, and against those who actually were on the cusp of bringing Assad down, the Kurds. The war in Syria, which our CIA sponsored, has got to be the most devastating blow ever perpetrated by a nation. Because it not only caused 10 million Syrians to be refugees and therefore caused the cancer
Europe
metastasized throughout Europe, America, and throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it also created the linchpin, the catalyst for World War III, for China and Russia on one side, Europe and America on the other. and then the very thing that will open the floodgates to this jihadist assault of Israel that Yahweh has spoken of, and the Turkey announced that they were following Hasatan's lead.
And
I don't think there's ever been a more stupid maneuver in human policy. And I had thought that the greatest political and military blunder in human history would be the American invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, because it destroyed the country. It's $6 trillion worth of debt, made a bad situation infinitely worse, and proved that the American military had no function, no purpose whatsoever, that it was a counterproductive source. And the fact that it was the invasion was based entirely on lies, and the country is rallied around this great service that was provided by the military when they made America infinitely more vulnerable. But the CIA conceived and sponsored war in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
It's far worse. Far worse. I mean, not even in the same hemisphere is stupid. So, this is where we find ourselves.
Wow.
So, Kirk, that was quite a departure into the world of conjecture. But, I think Yahweh lays these things out for us to make connections. And I think we do him and his word a disservice when we don't use our Nesama to try to make them. And, Kirk, you read through this. We talked about it briefly before the program. Feel free to disagree. These are my thoughts as I read through this. It's just, I like to think about it, and I hope it resonates with.
Well, I think mostly when they read it, they'll connect some even some more dots. I mean, like we're discussing right now. I mean, it's just, I find it rather amazing that, from listing letters and numbers and what they mean to statements that he makes, and then conjecture on this stuff, how consistent it is. I was talking to somebody today and yesterday about this covenant number, and we were discussing this, and it's like, it's just absolutely amazing how all the dots are connected so finely. I mean, I realize you conjecture. We don't know what seven dimension is like, and we can't experience that from our perspective, but we can certainly think. We've got a brain. And we know a lot about the universe now and how it works. We know a lot about light and how it works and so forth, and how you can measure the speed of light. That's not, I can't feel it, experience it, but I can in my mind a little bit. I'm not the greatest creative thinker. But no, I don't think it's a stretch, certainly what you've done here. But when you just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you go, wow, and then you connect them to the Moed Mikras and all. I thought that was rather brilliant, actually.
And even to the days of creation. But the thing that that strikes me about all of this is that it may sound somewhat simplistic to say, I was in the seventh dimension and we're in three. And to say, that's three to seven. That's no big deal, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the government goes through $7 trillion in a couple of years. I mean, what's going from three to seven? But
no,
the difference between each dimension is infinite.
Yeah.
Each step along the way is infinite. And so you're multiplying from three to four infinite times infinite. And from four to five, it's infinity cubed.
Mm-hmm.
Then each step along the way, and I know that's not a rational thought because infinity is an unlimited quantity.
Yeah. Hard to quantify.
Right. You can't quantify that which is not quantifiable.
Yeah.
And one of the things I want to share here is that, people are who are unthinking will say, well, God is infinite. Well, if it wasn't for the covenant, God wouldn't be infinite. People have there's no concept that God must grow and does grow.
Mm-hmm.
they want to say that, you know, he's as big as could, as big can be. No, he isn't. If God ceases to grow, he ceases to be infinite. The moment he ceases to grow, he becomes finite.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one way that the Creator can grow, and that's through relationships, through experiencing things that he cannot experience within himself.
Or not control.
Or not control.
To some degree. You know, you've got to be... Somebody's got to be able to input from other sources for you to...
Yes.
Or look at this, or let's try this. And you just, otherwise, you can do it all yourself, and you're pretty much self-contained to begin with. So, yeah,
correct.
Absolutely. That makes sense to me. I'm not a great thinker, but, yeah, that makes sense to me.
So here's Bereshit 17:7. And I will take a stand to establish, to confirm, and to raise. Vacuum. I will validate and honor. Setting up, constructing, and building, fulfilling and accomplishing, carrying out and restoring, encouraging others to take a successful stand to raise up and keep. Therefore, what? I will establish what?
His covenant. Covenant, yeah.
My covenant, yeah.
And my covenant.
But wait a minute.
Yes.
Is this that old covenant that had to be replaced with a new covenant? Whose covenant is this that these Christian morons think that they replaced? What's any mean? My. Who's speaking?
Yeah, well,
the Creator God of the universe.
Yes.
Whose covenant is it?
Yeah.
It is. Is this a Jewish thing? Hell no.
Pardon? No, he started with somebody who wasn't Jewish.
That's right. Yeah, he was Babylonian.
Yeah.
In fact, that's why you have to leave Babylon. He was a Babylonian that left Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Bereth Ani, my covenant family. So do you think that God ended his family? Do you think that God said, my family doesn't work, so let's create a new one? To be, to think there's a new covenant. That there's a new testament that replaced Yahweh's covenant family.
Yeah.
Is God somehow not infinite? Is God somehow powerless? Is God somehow a crappy father? His family, what, died?
Well, then his promises have to be no good.
That would be true. Yahweh says, I'm going to take a stand to what? Temporarily set up my covenant family?
No.
But I want to play with this thing knowing that it's going to fail. I'm going to use this as a placeholder so that Paul can come up with a better plan.
They're doing a new movie on Paul now.
Oh, I know. Can you imagine it? Paul, Apostle of Christ. Paul didn't know him. Paul never quoted him. Paul's words are the antithesis of his. Think, people.
Well, then you have to have a stupid God.
And look at all this. Kumbaya, you know, kumbaya, they'll say. Well, kum is the verb here.
Yeah, stand with.
Stand. Take a stand. Establish. Confirm. Raise up. Family. Bereth Ani. My family-oriented relationship agreement. My vow of marriage. My home and household promise. My pledge and contractual agreement. My binding oath. For the purpose of understanding, by making connections between me and you, and to promote an association with your offspring after you, for their generations to approach by way of a everlasting, everlasting olam, an eternal,
yes,
never ending, always continuing family covenant relationship. Approach and exist as your God, and also for your offspring to approach after you.
Once you get it, get away from Christianity and you understand it, it's really beyond stupid. I mean, it really is like, how could you ever, you know, I just feel so stupid sometimes when I read this again. I go, what were you thinking? Why didn't you read this the first time, you know?
Yeah. What were you thinking? I mean, I was once a Christian. What in the world?
I know. But still, it's just, I thought I was smarter than this. But, and then you re-question Paul and you go, who would choose him for anything? I wouldn't choose him for my doorman.
God, no. I wouldn't let him take out my trash.
He says I'm a pervert. He says I'm a liar. I am possessed by a demon spirit, and God chose me on the road to Damascus.
But you're going to be a Christian, and you think that there's a renewed covenant, that there's a new testament?
And that Olam doesn't mean forever?
You know, it was Paul that said that the old covenant was enslaving because it was with Hagar, which is a complete and utter lie. And that therefore there is a new covenant based on faith.
Yeah.
Well, God says there's one covenant, and it is forever. Olam. Does Olam mean anything like, well, until Paul comes around?
No, it says forever, everlasting, always, perpetually, beyond the vanishing point, the time that cannot be perceived. That's how far away it is. From Olam, hidden in the sense of being beyond the horizon, this unknown. Netzach, eternity.
So how can there be a Christianity?
There can't. It's man-made.
Be realistic, folks, yeah. There is no room here, no possibility whatsoever.
No wiggle room at all.
Does the Christian Bible contain this book?
Yes, sir.
Is there a book of Genesis in the Christian Bible?
Mm-hmm.
So why in the hell are 3 billion people so brain dead that they're incapable of reading this and saying, well, the covenant is God's. He's speaking in first person, and he says it's forever. And I want to claim that I'm the religion of Abraham, and yet God is saying that he's going to establish, confirm, and raise up, therefore, his singular covenant family for the purpose of understanding by making connections between me and you to promote an association with your offspring for their generations to approach by way of an everlasting, never-ending family covenant relationship. To approach and exist as your God. And you can't figure it out?
Well, now that you've been exposed to it, you should be able to figure it out, and you've exposed thousands. What is it that they can't turn around and walk the other way?
Or when it's laid out
for you.
I understand it. For a lot of people, it may have been difficult. You know, it was for a lot of us to figure this out initially. I mean, there's a lot of, you've got to find the oldest sources. You have to learn what the Hebrew words mean, and you have to really use the tools to effectively translate the words that God said and to create a more complete and accurate rendering of his testimony. Yeah, there's some work to be done, but when it's all laid out for you,
yeah.
What's your excuse?
Yeah.
How could you be somebody that has access to the internet and you can't figure this out now? You won't deal with it.
Yeah. So is the desire? There's no desire there for Yahweh.
No desire. No openness.
So if you wanted it, you could find it. I don't care where you are, you'd find it.
In the conflict between faith and fact, all of the religious people in the world have chosen faith over fact. But this is as powerful as anything could possibly be. And, of course, it has, Kirk, Maybe in the, my top five Hebrew words. Bien. B-Y-N.
Standing, yes.
You know, it's that three letters of B-Y-N. It's a family home. Yahweh's hand. And the sperm representing a child that is born. So this is a child that reaches up to Yahweh to live in his home. Bien. And it means to make a connection. And I know the word resonates with me because I have tried to quantify understanding. You know, most people confuse knowledge with understanding. They think of knowledge and understanding as similar concepts.
No, that's what they're not.
No. You can know a lot of things and understand nothing.
Yeah, you got PhDs running all over the place.
Right. And so... to know is needed to understand, but understanding is based upon making connections.
Yeah, grasp the meaning.
Right. To see how things relate to form a picture. To have the kind of filter so you can connect things that and discard them that are invalid and connect things and hold on to them and embrace them that are valid.
You know, even
and, you know, when we were going through Kirk and we said, okay, this is the date that Yahweh was going to return, well,
right.
We did that by being, by making connections. That whole, the discussion of dimensionality and how it relates to the days of creation and to the seven statements that Yahweh etched in stone and to the Moed Mikre and how each dimension relates to those other three things, that's all about being, making connections.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate dot-to-dot, connecting the dots so as to see the picture they are forming. And so, Yahweh is encouraging understanding. That's what he's doing. He's taking a stand to establish his covenant family for the purpose of understanding. Now, God doesn't much care if you understand how penicillin may serve to kill the little buggers that can make us sick, but can also destroy the culture of our digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a antibiotic, and we have probiotics to restore what they destroy. And he's not saying that, you know, I want you to understand how to create or synthesize something that will attack the hypoxic core of a cancer tumor and then release a trigger of toxins to cure cancer. That's not what he's saying. He says, I want you to understand one thing, how to make connections between me and you. How to form a relationship between me and you in the context of the covenant. That's what I'm doing. So I'm doing all of this to establish and to confirm my covenant relationship for the purpose of understanding the end by making connections between me and you.
Okay, let me expand on that a minute with the letters. Just because as you were talking, I was looking at here drawing a bet. Of course, you know, a bet is the tent from view from above, or a plan of the tent. And it's divided into two parts.
Uh-huh.
And it was divided that way, making a distinction. And we're asked to make a distinction between, for understanding, we have to make a distinction between two sides or two different thoughts or two different two or more things. So it starts out with being, starts out the same way, telling you just by the symbol alone what you're being asked to do is to be able to discern between a couple of things or more. And then you've got Yahweh, or the hand reaching down, lifting it up, in order to get from there to Yahweh lifting up the generations, which is the subject of this section. It's all right there in the letters, too.
Yes.
So so that's where they come up with understanding, and that's where, you know, it's just everything about this is just I mean, I may be rushing over these things, but everything about every time I translate the words, and then you go do that and you do that, and you find it's consistent throughout everything. I've never seen anything that's that consistent, no matter what you turn over. It's wow.
Yeah, and one of the things too, Kirk, is that we I'm going to say myself, I'll take the hit for this if I don't think I'm wrong.
Okay.
But I have said for is the single biggest distinction between people's perceptions of the path to God and the one I've deduced by studying His Word is that the singular path to God is developed in a singular way through understanding. And that what Yahweh is trying to do with His testimony is empower understanding. And it is the reason that He does not lay out a plan of salvation in 4 points.
Yeah.
It's why He does not explain directly the purpose of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, or Shavuot. It is why He doesn't say, here are the five conditions of the covenant. Here are the five benefits of the covenant. Here's the direct relationship between the covenant and the Moed Mikre. He doesn't spell any of that out. He doesn't tell you that the set-apart spirit is your spiritual mother.
No.
He doesn't say, here is how you look at the Hebrew words and the Hebrew alphabet to deduce the proper way to pronounce my name.
What?
He doesn't tell you that the human manifestation, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh's nature to fulfill the Moed Mikre is going to be Yosha. He does not tell you that He is going to return in year 6,000 Yah, which can be layered onto a pagan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
He does not tell you that when He returns, he's going to reestablish the earth as it was in the Garden of Eden. But everything I have just said is deducible if you examine His Word and make the necessary connections so as to understand. And it's only deducible if you seek to understand by making those connections. And so His testimony from beginning to end is specifically designed to enable and facilitate understanding by making connections.
So the two ingredients He's looking for is if you have the discernment and if you care to explore, right?
Correct. Are you willing to be reasonable?
Or what words?
In this conflict between fact and faith, are you willing to accept the facts and reject the faith?
Right.
Are you going to go where the words lead? Are you going to reason through them? Are you going to make... Is, you know, as we were delving into what the dimensions represent and how they relate to the Moed Mikre and the statements that Yah etched in stone and to the days of creation and to how it relates to the human experience and to living with God, the spiritual realm. Well, that was all about extrapolating based upon what we have come to know, making the connections with what we know, to understand that which we're seeking, to comprehend. That is the entire Torah, the prophets, the Psalms, all of it exists to facilitate understanding so that we can make the necessary connections to approach Yahweh through His covenant. That is what this statement is saying. It is the thing that I have, you know, I came to embrace so early on. How many times have I said to folks, Kirk, it's not about doing Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim and Shavuah right. It's not about picking the right day. It's not about what you do. It's not even about when you do it. It's about you understand it.
Well, that would have to be, if he reconciles on Yom Kippur, with his children, Mm-hmm. Maybe none of them have ever done peace talk, and they won't have a chance to do peace talk again because
that's
of
correct.
It.
That's
so
correct.
It's
but
more
can they understand it?
And what happened on peace talk, not right. what happened getting them out of Egypt, what happened on peace talk when Yosha was nailed mm-hmm. to an upright pole and stood
right.
up for us. That's
right.
what the whole story is about.
Right.
So I totally agree. I mean, I will do peace talk this weekend. And we, next weekend, and we will have the symbols because they're great teaching things and reminders and
sure.
all that sort of
yeah,
thing.
Gonna, oh, yeah, I'm going to love the symbols.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to do it too.
Yes, but if you miss the point about what he did in order to create this covenant family, mm-hmm. then you got nothing.
Yeah, I'm going to have the matzah. I'm going to have the olive oil with the bitter herbs. I'm going to have the lamb roasted on the fire, and I'm going to drink red wine. I'm going to have all of those symbols. And I'm going to celebrate what all those symbols represent
mm-hmm.
because I enjoy it. I'm not doing it because it makes me immortal.
Yeah.
Understanding what Yahweh facilitated and how the covenant is enabled, the covenant's benefits are enabled in this way, and how this is the door that Yahweh has opened to his home, and embrace it and understand it and accept it and act upon it, that's what matters. And the rest of it is part of the celebration of it.
Yeah.
I mean, now, personally, my favorite meat is lamb.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite bread is matzah. My favorite thing to do with matzah is to dip it in olive oil with herbs.
Mm-hmm.
And I love red wine. So, you know, for me, I'm having a celebration of the things
you.
That I happen to really enjoy.
We're going to suffer this
so
weekend,
it's
huh?
really, it is cheating. Not cheating, but you know, it plays the thing that I do year round. But maybe it's part of. I figured that the easiest way to make sense of all of this is that the more you read, the more you come to learn. The more you can model your own perspective off of Yah's to view things the same way, to appreciate the same things. You know, and there's a lot of things I don't fully understand, but I just accept them. You know, I said, okay, that's Yah's point of view. That's where he's going to do it. So here we go. Maybe the whole affinity for Pesach just happens to be that I like what he likes.
Yeah.
No, his favorite person is Dod. Guess who my favorite person is?
Well, I think it's Dod.
Yeah, it's Dod.
Just kind
so,
of picked up on
you know.
That.
Yeah, so it's just... That's not a bad thing, right?
No. No,
no share the same perspective. Share the same love. But this kind of a statement where Yahweh says, this is what I'm doing. I'm establishing this. I'm taking a stand on behalf of this. Which is my everlasting family relationship. And the purpose is to enhance and enable understanding. Because mm-hmm. I think that that is the purpose of eternity. I think that's the purpose of being with Yahweh in the seventh dimension. I don't think that this is, that understanding just leads to the benefits of the covenant, one of which is to be immortal and to live with God, therefore saved.
Mm-hmm. It must be
the purpose of eternity. It's the
purpose of eternity.
Of
what we've been doing.
Right. That we'll always have these connections with Yahweh. We'll always be expanding what we come to know and understand with Yahweh, and that is the entire purpose of eternity, which is why understanding is the perfect filter to determine who's included and who's excluded.
Mm-hmm.
Because by being included, you've already announced this is what you love, this is what you enjoy. Have a proclivity for. So here we are, just the 17th chapter of Bereshith Genesis, and look how much just extraordinary information there is here.
Thank goodness. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, two statements today. Bereshith, Genesis 17:6 and 17:7.
Yeah. Moving at lightning speed.
Moving at lightning speed. And we made our way through two statements.
We went from 17:16 to 17:17. Well done, my friend.
I loved every minute of it.
I'm sorry, we don't have to get out of this anytime soon. This is great. This is the center of the whole Torah to me. I mean, this is big deal.
And who would have thought? Like, for example, this is the first time it ever dawned on me, 1967.
Yeah. That was quite cool.
It's 66 years. And, you know, and six is a relevant number with Yahweh.
Well,
67 doesn't mean anything, and 33 doesn't mean anything. The fact that there is 66 years between the restoration of Jerusalem and the fulfillment of the six Moed Mikre. And year 6,000 Yah. So the sixth Mikre in year 6,000 Yah, and it's 66 years.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not buying that's a coincidence.
Don't seem like it.
No. Well, good stuff, Kirk. Thank you.
Yeah, indeed.
That was
I enjoyed it
seriously,
very much.
Seriously fun.
Yeah. And there's more on that plate for next week.
There's more on that plate, yeah. And, you know, I was thinking, do we go to, this week to Pesach? Or do we just...
This is kind of Pesach, you know. This is the deal.
Pesach.
So
yes,
we're not sorry. I think we should talk a little bit about Pesach, but, you know, just like when you were talking a few minutes ago, it is about understanding. It is about grasping what we're celebrating far more than just the celebration itself. We get swept up with the party and forget. I don't think most of us forget it all, but I'm saying it is... The good news about the whole thing is this is what this is for, and these what these symbols are, and Yahweh proves that he lives up to his promises. Every prophecy he's made has just about come true, and right up to the end when we know what's coming, it seems to be on time. Damascus will fall. Obviously, Erdogan has thrown up a flag, you know, just to remind everybody they're going to do exactly what Yahweh said they were going to do, the way Yahweh said they were going to do it. Yah's promises are good, so let's celebrate those promises. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes,
and you know, as I view it, Pesach was made for the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
There was no celebration of Pesach prior to the covenant. No. Pesach was made for the covenant. It's the doorway of Yahweh's home. Yahweh has one home, it's the covenant. So I think when you're talking about the covenant, you are talking about Pesach.
Yes, sir.
So. All right, my friend. Well, we'll be back again next Shabbat.
Okay, I look forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
Be safe, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Good night, Kurt.
Yes, sir.